Welcome to On Texas Football, Saturday edition. I've got Paul Wadlington of Inside Texas alongside me. We're going to talk a little Longhorn football today. Paul had a great article out on Thursday of this past week talking about some notes and behind-the-scenes stuff he had picked up personally over the last couple of weeks. Want to go over that and also talk a little Longhorn football in general. How are you doing today, Paul?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you?
You know, trying to have a good weekend here. Hey, let's get it started. The name that seems to be on the tip of everybody's tongues behind the scenes for Longhorn practice right now is Alfred Collins. You started your article out with him. Why?
Well, I think there's been a lot of talk about Alfred. I think people, well, let's go back. Let's wind the clock back and let's go to 2020 when we first got to see him after being a five-star recruit, great kid from the local Austin area. And, athletic family, came to UT with very high expectations because of his athleticism, came to Texas, really showed out as a freshman with some spot play, particularly in that bowl game against Colorado, and just showed, you know, next level athleticism with that tipped interception and that kind of stuff. And so people are primed for a big sophomore season from Alfred. Well, they have a coaching overturn, right? Herman's out, Sark's in. You get a new philosophy on defense. And Alfred Collins wasn't really what Pete Kwiatkowski wanted in those interior defensive line spots. He wants big run stoppers, space eaters, you know, occupiers. At least that was that iteration of the defense. And interestingly, we had some real issues at edge, as we all know back then, right? So halfway through that season, if you guys will remember, they started practicing Alfred Collins at the jack position, an edge position. And he had a week of practice. He'd never played there. And then they rolled him out against Oklahoma State, and he was the best defensive lineman and impact player in that game and actually played really well. And then started five games, played really well, even though that was a bad defense, and was sort of a bright spot. Everyone's excited for his junior year in 2021. Well, there's mixed stories on this, but there seemed to have been a lack of communication about whether Alfred was going to be an edge or Alfred was going to be inside. And the delta between those two things for Alfred could be weighing 270 or weighing 310. And so what happens is he comes out in the fall and, you've got some really good guys like Mauro Ojomo and you know, obviously Coburn and Sweat have solidified the nose spot. And that's not Alfred's deal. And he just fell behind. They had a frustrating spring and they felt like there was a lack of communication about what his role was going to be. And then people, I think, have forgotten that he was injured in the first fall practice. So his ability to sort of play catch up in the fall was taken away from him. In fact, he missed the opener against Louisiana Monroe. When that happened, he just fell behind in a talented room and he was sort of relegated to the second team. This offseason, his role has clarified. If you look at him and look at his body, he understands where he's playing now. He's going to play that three, that five technique, complementary to the nose tackle. And he's every bit of 310 pounds and looks like a brick outhouse, I guess is the nice way I can say it. He looks awesome, and he's kept his athleticism. He's gotten a lot stronger, and I think that also coincided with a little bit of a philosophical shift in that SNC program at Texas. And I think they had a realization that, hey, we need to get these guys strong and not just have them lift 225 real fast. That's Alfred is caught up in strength. He knows what he's doing. His technique is caught up, and I think he's primed for a really big senior season.
He's going to play more of that three technique, right? Where you have a little bit more leeway to get penetration, get upfield, maybe cause some havoc as opposed to just simply holding the point of attack, which is an extraordinarily valuable point value that Texas is trying to get at. That's really interesting to me because we talk about this and last year, they had two really strong nose tackles, not only Keandre, but also Tavondre Sweat. This year, do they have two nose tackles? Because neither Vernon Broughton nor Alfred Collins, the second team guys, are true nose tackles. Is that where Aaron Bryant maybe comes in your opinion?
Maybe.
Or Sadir Mitchell?
Byron Murphy.
You think he's going to play nose?
Oh, I think he's going to play up and down that line. I think he's too good to keep off the field. I think along with Collins, he's made some strides. Frankly, he had a great debut as a freshman.
Yeah, he did.
Quite well. But now he's got his opportunity. And I think you're going to see him be the primary backup for Sweat. And I think he's going to be a primary backup for Collins. I think they're going to have a rotation inside. It's a very deep group. It's a talented group. But Byron Murphy, he's going to be out there 30, 40 snaps a game somewhere. And Tavondre Sweat is a guy who's going to be more effective at around 40, 45 snaps where he can really let it go. You don't want to play him 65 snaps if you can help it. You know, you don't want to Iron Man a guy who weighs 345 pounds. So
even though he's one of your best players, you have to play him in spots.
You got to play him in spots. He's going to be more effective. You know, it's like basketball, right? They'll look at, you know.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Efficacy per minute, and they'll say, whoa, well, this guy does this per 20 minutes. Why don't we play him 40? Well, the answer is, he would denigrate pretty substantially over the next 10 to 15 that you play him, because his style is to just play, you know, balls out, and then that's how he reaps the benefits. And that's the same thing you want with your defensive line in general, right? If you want just constant depth and pressure on an offense and offensive line, just keep bringing in fresh bodies and tell them to get after it, because it can be hard for an offense to deal with just relentless defensive depth.
That's interesting, because that's one of the things that we've talked about happening at the edge position for Texas as well. With, we don't know who that guy opposite Baron Sorrell is going to be quite yet. We've heard good things not only about Justice Finkley and seen good things from Justice, but also Ethan Burke and even Chris Ross of late. People have been talking about him. I want to move forward, though, to the other position, really, that you kind of called out singularly. Like you really said, this is a position that I'm impressed with, and those behind the scenes that I talk to are impressed with. And it wasn't receiver. Doesn't mean that people aren't impressed with them. You picked out the defensive backs, Paul. Why did you pick them out? What was it that grabbed your attention from what you heard?
Well, what was said to me is, someone said to me, look, our second team defensive backs are better, more explosive athletes than our starters in 2021 or 2020, I should say, or 2021. And I said, I thought about it, and I said, well, yeah. And they said, well, that's the point, is the upgrades, it's happened. And not only have we upgraded with talent, which, hey, every 3 or 4 years since the last decade of Texas football kind of dive bombing a little bit, we've been sold on this new flock of defensive backs who are going to shift things back. And sometimes it's come to fruition, but I think we're seeing a confluence between talent, depth, and experience. And when you get that at defensive back, when you get that on the offensive line, you see a marked improvement in your offense, right? It's not just the improvement of each individual player. It's the whole group playing together. And look, if you're going to play, you know, knock on wood, 15 games in 2023, you need more than your starters at defensive back. You're going to have guys get hobbled. You're going to play some crazy pass-happy teams. You're going to want to think about exploring a dime, which we have not really run under Kwiatkowski. I think with all that talent and maybe some of the lack of depth at linebacker, I think we're going to look hard at maybe some dime packages where you've got Gavin Holmes and Keaton Crawford and Jade Barron and all those guys all out there at once and not just alternating. And you got guys like Austin Jordan and Terrence Brooks potentially coming off the bench. You know, they're probably starters at most of the other schools that we're going to play this year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I feel like, you know, a lot has been made of you mentioned Keaton Crawford, and that's one of the guys you took and talked about. He would be one of those guys that this is his contract year, so to speak, right? He's a senior. They recruited potentially over him with Jalen Catalan. Yep. Yet Catalan is injured right now and off, not practicing because he had a little shoulder cleanup this spring. You know, it's do or die time for him. And you've heard some nice things. Eric Nalin's heard some nice things behind the scenes. So has Justin Wells. But really, did the light bulb just need to come on, or was it something else with Keaton?
So with Keaton, he's an elite athlete. He can cover a lot of ground. He's actually, he's really strong. And if you guys can recall, whether special teams or some spot action, he hits. I mean, he brings it. He's not shy. But if you rewind, he was primarily an offensive player in high school who played cornerback. And the cornerback was, hey, Keaton, go cover that guy. Go wherever he goes and take him out of the game. Now, that's great. And that's when you're a high school coach and you're trying to win the game. That's what you want to do with a Keaton Crawford. And you want to hand him the ball and throw him the ball, right, on offense. But that's not a very good prep for college safety. So he comes in. He's learning a new role as a safety where you really have to see the whole field. You have to understand not just the play call, but the precepts of the position. Right? No one gets by me. Hey, when do I come up hard to support the run? When is that a big mistake? All that basic stuff, right? You know, is my responsibility the flat? No, I'm supposed to stay here. Okay, I'll do that. You know, that's hard to do in real time when you're processing it all at once. And he did it under an old system. He gets Kukowski. He's got his system. That system, again, changed with the introduction of Gary Patterson, where they brought in the left-right, more agnostic sort of safety, where you don't have this clear, I'm a field, I'm a boundary safety. That's all out the door. So he's finally gotten his legs under him. And as with any great athlete, if he's comfortable enough that he feels like he knows what's going on, then he can let it go and really let his athleticism shine. The good thing about Keaton is, though he is a senior, he still does have a COVID year in his pocket. So if this year is not his, you know, it could be a breakout, but not the kind of breakout that he thinks will get him in the part of the draft he wants to be, he can always come back and be the man in 2024.
Well, it's interesting. He reminds me of Adrian Colbert from an athletic standpoint. Good, real, just plus athlete, physical. Colbert never could become a safety at Texas. They tried. Dwayne Aquina tried. So he transferred out and went to Miami, ended up being a corner and played a little bit in the league. Crawford reminds me of that type of player. We'll have to see how he does this year because he's got an interesting body of work right now. You mentioned his special team stuff, and he's tremendous in special teams. And so there's that.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
A couple other thoughts. But before we go there, I want you to say thank you to Gabe Winslow. Over at Mortgages by Gabe.
Absolutely. A big thank you to Gabe Winslow. The Longhorn program is on the upswing, but Gabe has been at the top, staying there the whole time. Give him a call. Find out why. 832-557-1095 or Mortgages by Gabe. It's right there on the screen. He's a diehard, passionate Longhorn. He's really, really good at what he does. It's not about just providing you a quote. It's about solving problems and strategizing the most important financial decision of your life.
Got it. Yep. Got to buy a house sometimes, right?
Hey, at some point you got to buy a house, and it's the biggest thing. It's the biggest investment you'll ever make in your life for 99% of us.
Yes, no doubt. Hey, the question I had for you: you also mentioned Savion Redd in your article. I want to talk about him. I also want to mention what you saw or what people behind the scenes have heard of Quinn Ewers, and then Jett Bush as well.
Yeah. So Savion Redd is strong. Newsflash, and there's sort of a strong for a receiver and then strong for a running back. And those are different things, right? Savion Redd is strong for a running back. He's got one of the strongest lower bodies in that room. He's every bit of 214, 215 pounds. He's 5'10". He's put together, and a lot of it's below his belt, in his thighs and his glutes. And I mean, the person I was talking to was like, the coaches are actually kind of pondering, like, is our converted wide receiver maybe our best short yardage back? Not typically what you think when you make a transition like that. You think he's going to be a scat back, but obviously he keeps those hands. But he is a tough runner. He'll grind it out inside. He's not just trying to break it and be a finesse guy. I think he's taken to this like a duck in water. I think what I'm gathering from what I've gathered and just sort of looking at the different types, I think we're going to have a tag team running back room. I think there's going to be a bunch of dudes participating and getting their carries and having a disseminated load, which, yeah, could work just fine if all the guys are good.
Yeah, and the question I would have for that is, or comment, that's not something Sark historically has done.
I mean,
he's stuck with one. What about Quinn Ewers? You like the shape he came in? That's what people are talking about behind the scenes?
Yeah, he's in good shape. I think he had a little baby fat last year, and I mean, he's just growing up. You know, he's a young guy. I think he got in better shape. I think he understood that he needs to move better. Ewers is a pocket passer, but don't, you know, go cue up some old Southlake film. The guy can run. He's a respectable athlete. And obviously Sark will never feature that. But it is useful for him to feel agile and to be able to move and navigate the pocket and find windows. You know, Quinn is 6'1.5", you know, 6'2", maybe. So he needs to be able to move around a little bit in the pocket and find his windows. He's not a 6'5" guy that's going to stand back there big and strong and still be able to see over everything. So I think it's really benefited him.
I was talking to on the live stream on Friday with Jerry Hamilton and Ian Boyd. Ian Boyd mentioned something that kind of struck me. He said he thinks Jett Bush might be the best pass rushing linebacker at this point, simply because he's got some experience doing it on the outside, even though he's not very good on the outside on the line of scrimmage. He's just not big enough. He actually did develop some get after it there. What do you think? What is it that you're hearing about Jett Bush, who currently is backing up Jalen Ford at that Mike linebacker position?
He is solidly Jalen Ford's backup. He's the guy that's going out there, and he's earned it. He's built himself into that. The thing about Jett Bush is he's actually bigger now than when he was playing on the line of scrimmage, which that guy gave it his all, but sometimes you could just see he's given up 75 pounds. This physics ain't going to happen, right? He's every bit of 240, 245 right now, and he has pretty good quickness. He's a better athlete than I think people give him credit for. And now the skill of being a pass rusher from middle linebacker or Mike, our inside linebacker position, some of that's about suddenness and timing, and also your ability to fight through someone getting a piece of you, right? You know, you've got a bigger, stronger guy who you're quicker than. So can you use your quickness to set him up a little bit, go the other way, and he's still going to get a piece of you. So are you strong enough to fight through that and still go get the quarterback? And if Jett Bush, you know, he might be, I probably still stick with Jalen Ford there. Jalen is a hard guy to go against for any sort of attribute as a linebacker, because he's just good at everything.
But, he's also longer limb, got a little bit more depth. I didn't take exception necessarily with what Ian said. It just made me ponder, right?
Yeah.
Like, huh, this, he really thinks highly of him. Look, Paul, one of the things I wanted to get to, and I know it's 15, 16 minutes into this video before I'm talking about it here now, but the overall tenor of your article was something that I took away from it. And that was the upping the ante from a competition standpoint across the board. People have to learn how to appreciate that, because it's one thing to be one deep. They're going to a conference in 2024 where you have to be two deep, because you're gonna get injured. You're not going to have all 13 games with the same offensive line. It's just not going to happen. You're going to go two and three deep along the defensive front, because they're going to get, you know, tagged. They may not be out for a whole season, but they'll be out 2 or 3 weeks with a bum shoulder. You never know.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
You've been around it. I've been around it. The roster itself right now, in your opinion, would you give it an A? Would you give it a B, B plus, A minus? Where are you at right now with that from a depth standpoint and ability standpoint?
I'm a hard grader. So okay. I'm grading from the premise of a Texas Longhorn football playoff team. So I'd say it's a B, B plus.
Got it.
And a couple of years ago, I would have said we were a C minus, if that.
Yeah, I think that you're not wrong, because obviously it's an opinion, but the offensive line is still relatively young, the best players on it. The defensive line, they definitely need an edge that's an adult. And I don't mean Justice Flink, you know what I mean by that. They need that 2 or 3 year experience defensive end. They need another interior defensive lineman, in my opinion. They're going to play David Benda, it sounds like, at one of the linebacker positions. I do think they're there in the secondary. And I think they're there at all of the other offensive spots, really. I even like the running back room. But there are just enough little question marks that make me think, B, B plus, maybe A minus. I will say this, they have some special guys. Jatavion Sanders is a special guy, potentially. Some of the receivers, potentially special. Quarterback room, potentially special. I just wonder how it's all going to turn out, because I do feel like they're getting better competition across the board, and the value of that will come out to play late in seasons, in my opinion.
Rewind to 2004 Texas. That team previewed and presaged 2005. And you saw its culmination in the last game of the season, which I was fortunate enough to be at, the Michigan Rose Bowl, where you turned to the person next to you and said, it's on. Vince has figured this out. And then you saw what was coming back. Even with the loss of some really great Longhorn players like Cedric Benson and stuff, you knew that 2005 team was going to be very special. Maybe this group is at that 2004 phase, right? Where they're going to be the preview of what's to come, but you're still going to see really good football. Like, this is a team that should win the Big 12, should make its stake its claim for the playoff. This is a team that, you know, as you said, for the offensive line, they're a year out from peaking, right? They're still quite young, actually. They're probably 2 years out from peaking, several of those guys. So, you know, and Quinn Ewers, same. Right. Quinn Ewers will be better in 2024 than 2023. Right. And so I think that's all good, but that doesn't mean that this isn't the breakout season, because if they go out and win the games they're supposed to win and they go out and take care of business early in September in Alabama, which they're fully capable of, they've got a launching pad where, you know, things could get real interesting for the playoffs, because I don't see the clear dominant team in college football heading into this year. Do you?
No. I tell you what, USC with that quarterback, but I don't know that Lincoln Riley's teams are ever going to be good enough on defense.
So I don't think it's actually in like part of who he is. I mean, part of like USC is what he inherited, right? He has a 200-pound inside linebacker, right?
Right.
And you know, you got Tulane driving the ball in the fourth quarter and whipping them, right? And winning that football game. I don't know if that's not because Lincoln Riley, his offense is eroding his defense. It's just, that's how it fell. And we have seen some Oklahoma teams with Lincoln Riley where they did field a good defense. But the question is Alex Grinch going to make some of the changes and adaptations he needs to make to his system to really succeed and thrive? Ultimately, I don't know. I know their offense is going to put up a bunch of points. I know their defense is going to give up some points.
So. I mean, look, Ohio State, Michigan, Georgia, Alabama.
Yep.
Those are the four that are probably the most talented. Scheme-wise, I would think USC holds a little advantage on offense. Not sure about now with Clemson, with Garrett Riley. athletically, they're going to be there, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. The numbers are going to play out, and we'll see who does what. But Texas is getting into that echelon where they're starting to be the competition level is starting to be such that you're going to put a really good player on the field. There's a couple spots where they need some numbers and need some experience, but overall, you're going to end up putting a potential NFL player on the field at just about every position. And that's a lot.
And think about, so some coaches give, some talk to everything's competition, but a lot of coaches like anointing guys and knowing who their starter is going to be. And they channel all their reps through him. That's not how Sark was brought up. And as different as contrasting as Pete Carroll and Nick Saban are, and Nick Saban, obviously very formative for Sark late in his career, however briefly he was there, but Carroll's where he had most of his development as a coach philosophically. Carroll, don't let the like laid back California. The practices at USC on Tuesday were vicious, and the demotions and the changes in lineups happened right there on the field. Coaches told you to take off your jersey and hand it to another guy, and he walked over there as the starter, and that's how it was on that Saturday. And that's what Sark grew up on. He is not shy about making those calls. And the good news is, hopefully, we also have a culture where guys who are challenged aren't going to quit and get on Twitter and enter the transfer portal, but they're going to actually maybe stay and try to fight for their job. We'll see. TBD on that one, right, Bobby?
No doubt. All right, Paul Wadlington, InsideTexas.com. Thank you for joining us for this Saturday conversation. We've been doing it. Really enjoyed it. Missed it last week, Paul. Also, thank you to our sponsor, Mortgages by Gabe. Gabe Winslow is your guy for all your mortgage needs. Paul, thanks a bunch, man, and I'll see you again next week.
Hey, always a pleasure. I'll look forward to it.
All right, take care now.
See you.
Thank you for watching. For more videos on Texas football, recruiting, and other sports, make sure you click the like button and subscribe to the channel to get the very latest updates. Thank you for watching again, and hook 'em.